Welcome back, everybody. Good to have you with us here on the Mark Steiner Show. So we talk a lot about the crime in the city and about the murder rate, and of course it's on everybody's lips. Everybody's thinking about it. But, you know, sometimes when we talk about it in the abstract, unless we talk about it in terms of the people who live there every day, who work with us every day, who feel it every day. We see it in the abstract and can't really kind of put our hands around what we need to do about it. And we have two gentlemen with us here in the studio who have been involved in this work for many, many years, and also a woman in the studio who was here the other week, who's one of our leading policy thinkers on this issue. Clayton Guyton is executive director of the Rose Street Community Center for the last almost 20 years now.
Yes, sir.
Right?
Yes, sir.
Close to it. Has been working at Rose and Ashland with gang members in the street, with violence in the street, now runs one of the most successful halfway house programs in our community, with men coming back from prison, returning to society. He and the men he worked with have been deeply involved in the work around violence in their community and dealing with it. We'll hear about that. So Clayton's in the studio. Ray Cook is back with us, who's been on the show many times also over the last 20 years, also been involved for that amount of time in the community, working with young people and around violence issues in Poplar Grove, and works with youth in Poplar Grove, and joins us back in the studio once again. And Tara Huffman's with us, director of Criminal and Juvenile Justice Program with OSI Baltimore Open Society Institute, is back in the studio. And Tara, good to have you with us, Atero, as well.
Thanks again for the invitation.
Thank you. Mm-hmm.
And thank please you join us. Your ideas and thoughts are vital. 410-319-8888. Write to us here, talk@steinershow.org. Tweet me at Mark Steiner, but do call in. 410-319-8888. I'll check our Facebook pages. We want to hear your thoughts about your thoughts in the cycle of violence. And so you said something to me on the way in the door. Clayton, I just may be interesting to start with that idea, just to throw a feel out here for a moment. And you were talking about the nervousness, the pressure, the fear among young people in the street. Talk about what you were talking about.
Well, in these recent months with the surge in homicides, the surge in feelings about unpredictability, whether you're going to be here tomorrow, you just don't know the uncertainty of, life, the stress, the pain, this all that's at a all-time high, and it's unbelievable. You can start off with a conversation with a young person talking about anything, talking about the Ravens, talking about the Orioles, and you end up talking about the violence in the street. It's almost like hitched onto that engine is this culture of homicides and violence. And the question is there, what should I do? How should I live? Should I stay in Baltimore? Should I move out of Baltimore? I want to live, but I'm not sure how to do that now because I'm surrounded by this negativity. And it gives you a sense of hopelessness, but to the point where you say, look, I'm hopeless, but I'm not counted out. And that's what we at Rose Street try to do. Try to say, yeah, there's a sense of hopelessness, but we're not finished. We're at a point where we can do something about this if we try hard enough.
And are you feeling the same thing, Ray, in Poplar Grove among young people?
Well, it's the same thing across the city, really. You know what I mean? It's just, Poplar Grove and Monument Street, those are hotbeds, you know what I mean? But it's hitting all the surrounding area. I was on Pratt and Pulaski. You know what I mean? Because now I find myself going wherever I'm needed. You know what I mean? It's because some kind of way, especially with the West Side, Poplar Grove has its hands in so much over there as far as homicides and gun trafficking and all kind of stuff. So just because you pinpoint one area, it doesn't mean that one is not affected by the other. But one of the things that what's really disturbing to me is that the young people being afraid to go back to school because they don't know what's coming right now. You know what I mean? They don't know that even though schools have given out a great job, many jobs to the youth works, there are still was a lot of youth that didn't work who had to contend with just surviving every day out there in the street. And I think that the alarming number of people getting high and using substance is because that's their coping mechanism to deal with being out there every day. Because like he said, they don't know if they're going to live or die. You know what I mean? And this is male and female. So rather than what they're doing there is killing themselves on a mental state than a physical state. Okay, so that's why I said that there's many dead, but there's still many walking dead because they have already given up, you know what I mean? And it's so many people at fault, okay, for this problem. And one of the people was asking me, like, Ray, please tell them this. Please, when I was telling people, guys off the street, that I got to go on a radio show. And I'm talking about guys who've been out there, who did some dirt in the day. And they was like, man, please tell them. And then young guys like, Mr. Ray, please tell them this, you know. And what I heard out of all of that, okay, is that we want help and we want it now.
So, you know? And I think that, Tara, let me turn to you and I'll come back to some other thoughts that popped up between Clayton and Ray. But I think one of the things we don't talk about in public a lot in this whole dialogue, whether it's the way the press covers it or what our politicians say and the rest, is how we begin to talk about how we want to address this mm-hmm. without only talking about policing and criminalization of everybody. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely.
I mean, that to me is, I mean, sure, I mean, there's a panic about all the spike in armed robberies. There's mm-hmm. a panic about the spike in murders and shootings, and we have to deal with that. But are there ways that we can begin to deal with this that are not just about an onslaught of putting people in jail?
Well, what we know and the statistics are telling us that the greater investment that we've made in policing and the greater investment that we've made in prisons have not produced the results that
exactly.
we wanted them to produce. We spending on incarceration has tripled in the last few decades, and it has outpaced the spending that we do on education. In fact, you can find some jurisdictions in some states where their spending on education has decreased while their spending mm-hmm. on policing and prisons has tripled or even quadrupled over the last 20 to 30 years. And so on a very, very superficial level, it sort of is intuitive that if you have more crime happening, you throw more police at the problem and you should be able to solve the problem. But law enforcement and criminal justice was never set up to stop crime. It was set up to respond to crime once it was committed. If you actually want to prevent a crime from happening, however, that's not the job of policing and criminal justice. They investigate and then they punish. But if you want to reduce crime, you've got to make that happen at a community level. You have to make that happen at a family level. You have to make that happen at a major institution level outside of criminal justice. And we're not putting our investments in those things that can get at the root causes of criminal activity and criminal offenses. Instead, we keep throwing our money at the reactionary and reactive approaches and not putting enough in the front end. Real prevention. Real prevention does not begin with the police. Real prevention begins in the home, and then you extend that out to the community, and then you extend that out to the schools and the churches and the rec centers. And only if those things fail should you then have to rely on police and criminal justice. So we've put our investments in the wrong places, and we're reaping the fruit of that.
I think that going back, piggybacking off what she's saying, that My granddaughter, who's 8, asked me last night. She said, Pop, what happened to... I said, you know, when it was pouring that rain, I said, you know, when we were little, we used to lay in the gutter and let the water run over us because we didn't have pools. And we would lay in the gutters. She said, well, can't we do that today? I said, no, the streets are too dirty. You don't know what's going to come down the gutter these days. I said, but we used to have clean blocks and we used to have things that was rewarded. We have to go back to basics, what made us as people who had nothing, but we relied on what we had to make us happy. And one of the things that people keep going back to the churches, the churches was a vital role in our community, such a vital role, that was an area that was respected, that domain, whether you walked in front or on the side or whatever. You never cussed in front of a church. You never smoked a cigarette. Your daggone sure didn't take a drink in front of the church, okay? But now that has been removed. Now, when it comes to our young people. Our young people want to live. Let's get that straight, first of all. They want to live. They want to enjoy life like everyone else. But the avenues must start at home, and it must start in our areas. No one is asking the police to raise our children. We're asking you to protect our community, okay? We will raise our children. What has happened is that we have allowed others, other things on TV, other things in the media to raise our children, which is giving them lies and misinformation, okay? Because our children feel like that they really can look at TV and say, hey, that's what I'm going to be. But they have set the bar so high for our kids that they have forgot that there's a process that you have to go through in order to be whatever you want to be in life. And the first process is treat each other right and treat with respect. And that is taken away. We have to store that back into our children. I'm not, man, me personally, I'm not depending on the police to do anything for me, period. Okay? And we have got to get away from that. And when they say black-on-black crime, you're right. But that still not gives you an excuse to say, hey, well, that's your problem and not ours.
Mm-hmm. If I may, Mark. I like what both of y'all said about the churches. And we at Rose Street, we recognize the historical position that the church holds in the African-American community. And we also recognize that they have lessened their responsibility to our community. So we said, look, we're going to take one of the aspects of the religious training, if you will, and we as a community association is going to take that on. So we taking on the aspect of fasting and praying.
Mm.
We started yesterday, and we're going all the way to the end of the year.
Mm.
We got people coming in from the community that stands on the corners, that do anything that you might think of, and they're picking a day for fasting and praying. 24 hours. I did my 24 hours. Mine ended this morning. And we fasting and praying for peace.
Mm.
The second aspect of this is we challenging the churches to stay open 24/7.
Mm.
If we, a community organization, can do this, I mean, nobody is ordained. Very, very few of the people that come to Rose Street go to church. And if we can take on the responsibility or the training or the belief system of the church and bring it to the grassroots level, like you're saying, then we can challenge the churches to go back and do what you're supposed to do.
I want to open the phones here, but I want to take from what all of you have said and kind of figure out, I mean, given the history of what's happened in this city and how we've changed over the last 45 years as a city.
Hmm.
And think about where this future goes, both the tip, because I think it's an internal process, as you all are talking about,
mm-hmm.
but it's also an external process in terms of
mm-hmm.
policy one has to change to make things different in communities.
Because
mm-hmm. you can stabilize it,
mm-hmm.
then it'll just explode again
mm-hmm.
because the conditions are the same
mm-hmm.
that are making it happen all over again. So, mm-hmm. I mean, mm-hmm. but let me open the phones. I'm going to come back to that. 410-319-8888. Bill, in Baltimore, you're on the air. Welcome.
Yes, first, let me just say hello to everybody.
Good morning.
Hey, how you doing, bro?
And, you know, I have to be honest. I mean, for myself, I always say that our natural enemy is the government. I'm going to say why. I mean, the government regulates what we see on television and every doggone thing else. Mark, I know I've called your show several different times. I always bring this issue up. Recently, they confiscated 147-pound cocaine that they say may have been more than that. They say 147 pounds down in the pier. Again, I always say, why is that citizens do not have a right to witness the incineration process of weapons and drugs confiscated? See, what baffles me is that how can we keep talking about the killing and everything when all the guns and the drugs the police take off the street, there's no accountability to make sure that they destroy them. They may be getting right back on the street that's causing all the harm and the death. And as long as this issue has been out, politicians don't want to touch it. A lot of talk show hosts don't really want to touch it, but it's a serious issue. Should we not have accountability in terms of the drugs and weapons that the police confiscate off these streets?
That's a good question. Tara, do you know anything about that, what he's describing?
I don't know. I mean, I have heard that before, and I've heard different advocates and grassroots activists call for that in different parts of the country. I've heard it from folks in different parts of the state. And, you know, it sort of does raise the question if there could be a public witnessing of something of this nature, you know, what kind of impact that would have. Of course, law enforcement will tell you there's some sort of law enforcement reason why they do what they do. Sometimes they use those same drugs that they've confiscated to do undercover investigations. And I don't know what happens to the guns that they confiscate, including the buyback programs. You know, once they buy back all those guns, you know, what happens to them. But I mean, it sort of raises question that needs to be answered. But to his beginning point, I would say that government bears some responsibility in what we're seeing right now. And unless and until government and government institutions own their responsibility in what we're seeing right now, we're going to have a difficult time getting to those solutions that are sustainable, that do more than just sort of stabilize for a moment before the lid gets blown off of it. If you look at the budget, state, local, even federal budget, someone who is a credit counselor or someone who's a wealth coach will always tell you they can tell you what your priorities are simply by looking at your bank statement. Because your passion goes, your money goes where your passion goes. Your money goes where your priority goes. Well, if you looked at the state budget and if you looked at the Baltimore City budget, and if you looked at the U.S. federal budget and you asked the question, what are our priorities? You would see that we are prioritizing criminal justice, policing, surveillance, interdiction, punishment, supervision. We're prioritizing those things over education, over drug treatment, over mental health treatment and counseling, over those things that begin to get at the root causes of why people commit criminal offenses. Are there some folks who are just going to commit a crime and they don't have a drug addiction and they don't have any mental health issues? Yes. But those individuals are a population within a larger population of people who are sitting in prisons, but for the fact, if you were to give them some other intervention, but for the fact, had they gotten certain intervention up front, they wouldn't be sitting in prisons right now. And it's, quote unquote, not too late for that intervention. We just have to make the decision. We have to make the decision to put our emphasis someplace else than where we're putting it right now.
You know, I agree with her. And I was just sitting here thinking that, you know, there are so many great organizations out here who's been out here on the front line so long fighting this thing. And one of the things that I've said to you over 10 years ago, I said the reason why one thing won't change in Baltimore is because they have never faced up to the lie that these murders has been going on for 30 years, number one, okay? Number two, all killings are not just done by street people, okay? Some of the, now, I don't know, some of the questions that I'm bringing this straight from the street, so as you hear it from me coming from the street. They want to know, you know me, Mr. Ray, all these killings are not coming by guys killing each other on the street because it's too many headshots for these young guys being killed. And one thing that you do know, that when this stuff happens on the street, it is not, back in the day, a guy would shoot a guy and you may hit him in the arm or leg. These are straight murder shots, okay? So that means murder is on whoever's mind. It's in there. That's to kill, to destroy. Now, since the Freddie Gray incidents, what has happened to build that neighborhood? What has been built up new in that neighborhood to say, hey, this is what we're going to fix, you know? And I'm not talking about a church that you had, that you threw some balloons up around to say that this is the new Freddie Gray Center. Okay, we're not talking about that. But we want to know that where have you went and gathered those youth who suffered in that community to say, hey, can you help us build us? Because, see, when you involve people in building things that they destroyed, they would take more pride in keeping that thing up, okay? We got to engage the community in building our community. Give them the support. Them brothers who came home who did all that time in prison, those lifers, doing some great work. You know what I mean? Brother Clayton been over there for many years. I've been on the front line. And when I was on Pratt and Pulaski, where they burglarized all the pawn shops, all right, because that was a source of pain. You may have lent me the money to get my stuff, but you also, I had to give up something that was valuable to me, and that hurt. So the first thing I want to do is tear it down. So the churches, the mosque, all these Catholic, all these people have a point. Now, we don't need to point fingers at you, but what you do have, and what God always gives you, is a chance to get it right. Now, you have a chance to get it right now, okay? So either you can do that, or you can, we'll be sitting at these tables for the next 10 or 15 years.
Well, I mean, but I mean, what I really would like to kind of focus on the next half now that we have together and get to this phone call and then come back to this is I really want to focus in on what it is that we propose that has to be done to end where we are. I mean, because the reality of the economic situation in our communities is what it is. Mm-hmm. And we know it's there.
Right.
That has to change. Mm-hmm. So how do we begin to change that? I mean, that is part of the root of what has to change, if anything is going to change. That no jobs, no families, no structure, things fall apart. That's the difference from 45 years ago. Mm-hmm. And so the question is, how do we begin to, what begins to answer that? Mm-hmm. Becomes a strategy we're not even thinking of. Welcome back. It's Mark Steiner here with Clayton Guyton, Ray Cook, and Tara Huffman, and you at 410-319-8888. Can spend this next half hour looking at solutions. We want to come right from the communities where we have to go to think about what changes have to be made. Some are social, many are economic. 410-319-8888. Many, as Tara Huffman, the same point, went to break. Did you say during break or did you say in the break?
I said in the break.
In the break. So we'll get back to what you said, which is disinvestment. What does that mean? 410-319-8888. Let's try to get Larry back on the line at 410-319-8888. Larry, are you there? Larry, are you there? Okay. We'll go back to our conversation. 410-319-8888. Larry, if you're listening to the show, you can get your phone. Let us know. We'll get you on the air here. Do call in at 410-319-8888. What do you mean by disinvestment has to happen?
So the Open Society Foundations and Open Society Institute Baltimore, which has been here since 1997, we believe that there has to be, we want to see a reduction of at least 50% in mass incarceration across the nation and here in Maryland. The only way that's going to happen is with a disinvestment from the criminal justice system and back into those institutions and people that prevent crime and actually build healthy communities and families. Over the last 20, 30 years, governments have made the decision. It didn't just happen. Governments have made the decision to increase their investments in policing, increase their investments in jails and prisons, increase their investment in supervision. In other words, you've seen the criminal justice system as a system and then institutions within that system just balloon. Mm-hmm. And I have studied public administration enough to know that the nature of a bureaucracy is to grow. Mm-hmm. Not shrink.
Right.
So once you start feeding it, it just keeps eating and eating and eating. And that's what happened. We started feeding the criminal justice system and it became this monster that has eaten up a lot of state and local budgets. But that was a decision that made and it came at a cost because that money had to come from someplace. You either raise taxes to create more money to continue the investments that you've been making in other institutions and systems and increase the investment that you're making in criminal justice, or you had to take money from one place to put it in the criminal justice system. We've done the latter. The only way we're going to get to this is we have to now reverse course. We have to begin to disinvest from the criminal justice system and begin to reinvest in those things that we had been disinvesting in for the last 20, 30 years.
And that becomes a political question.
Yes.
And becomes a question of organizing politically to make that change. I mean, that's why I'm saying it has to come from two ways. I mean, in other words, we there's a natural alliance that's never been built. And to me, that natural alliance is between Baltimore City, Prince George's County, and Montgomery County.
That's right.
The most progressive counties politically – jurisdictions in the state,
yes,
who could become allies rather than adversaries. Mm-hmm. The three jurisdictions that that did not vote for Mr. Hogan, and that could form that kind of effort together, but it takes that kind of political change as a force.
It takes political will, and you're correct. The the pressure is going to have to come from outside of the political system because for, I started to say perverted, dysfunctional reasons, it's actually in political political parties' best interest to maintain the status quo.
Right.
They've developed these very dysfunctional, messy relationships with parts of this system that it's actually in their best interest to just leave things where they are.
The
pressure is going to have to come from outside of the system. That sort of organizing to put pressure on. Because I tell you, part of the reason why we may have seen sort of this increased investments, yes, there is private interest that benefited from that. But people want to be safe.
Mm-hmm.
And we have created this narrative that the police make us safe.
Mm-hmm.
So anytime you begin to feel unsafe, you start calling the police.
Call the police.
And we even have neighborhoods today, neighborhoods of color today, who say we want to see more police.
Mm-hmm.
We want more police in our communities. We want more police patrol in our communities. Where are the police? How come I never see a car parked outside? Because we've created this narrative that police equals safety. And we are going to have to rewrite that narrative, because if that's the narrative that police make us safer, we will continue to be okay with governments feeding that monster. We have to rewrite the story.
I got to jump in on that. In our community, that's not true.
Yeah, exactly.
We don't feel that the police make
us
safe.
And
we feel that the community, actually the young man standing on the corner, make us safe.
That's right.
Now,
that's right.
I want to say our approach is more like this. You need a top down and a bottom up.
Mm-hmm.
All right? And everyone must declare that we're in a state of emergency.
That's right. Everybody.
Now, and the ones that from the bottom up that's more capable of doing that is the churches.
Mm-hmm.
The churches have to do like Councilman Scott Brandon said, Brandon Scott said about a week ago, we're in a state of emergency.
Mm-hmm.
The churches will not say that.
Nope.
I dare you to get a preacher on television to say we're in a state of emergency, even though he know that we are.
Yes.
Because for him to say that, he got to operate his church, his worship place, in a different way. So we got to declare a state of emergency, and then when we do that, we got to all come together with a plan from the bottom up. And the churches need to be more involved in this culture of homicides. They too far removed from the culture.
Mm-hmm.
And we as a community, that's what we're doing at Road Street, and that's why we're challenging them. Pull yourself into the center of this homicide culture, because that's where new and fresh ideas is going to come from, because that's where they have come from historically in our community. The Reverend Martin Luther King,
Malcolm X,
all these religious leaders, and the present church has forgotten that, and that's what we are doing now. We are saying to the churches, open your doors 24/7 so we can get some work done.
One of the things, Mark.
I have to get the phones here, just to make it fast.
Yeah, one of the things, I do really understand what this sister said.
Yes, right.
Because we have gotten away from where we used to be like, man, we got this, man, man, make sure you keep the police out, Jack. Mm-hmm. We got this. Because it was our community, you know what I mean? What happened to them sisters or these kids getting killed, you know what I mean? By the time the police would have got them, if they were still alive, okay, you would have never saw that baby killed over there and nobody told. You would have never saw that girl killed on that dirt bike, nobody told. You would have never saw that girl with the baby and the little boy killed in that house. By the time we finished with them, okay, that's the way, because we policed our own neighborhood.
Exactly.
And I know what this sister is saying, and I know what Brother Clayton is saying. Okay, because right there, the accountability must come from within where we are. The approach that I'm taking now, I'm not trying to meet the masses no more. My approach is now is working from within and working our way out. Okay, my daughter just started a program called Mother's Den. And Mother's Den is simply a program for battered mentally women from guys who have just literally beat the hell out of them mentally with 3 and 4 children that they have to raise by themselves, okay? So if we don't put in these little babies that, hey, you are still somebody, you still, in spite of your father or whatever being messed up, We got to start empowering our own people. And the way you do it is start coming from within. And the church must first admit, and the mosque, okay, so, that, hey, we have failed on this line right now.
We have a lot of people calling. I'm going to get to the phones here because I think you're right. So what I'm hearing from – but
the, you're right, sister.
The conversation here, it has to come from both ends.
Yes.
And they have
she's
to –
right from her community, not from ours.
Right.
Because the police could do very little in our community.
Thank you.
When they shot those three young people on Glover Street, when the police came, they was already stepping up to the plate.
And that's
hey,
true.
We're not going to allow this in
that's
our
true.
Community. And the definition of snitch is being changed in our community.
Exactly.
If you shoot my brother and I see you, and I tell, that's love. That's not snitching.
Exactly.
That's right.
If me and you rob a bank and I tell on you, that's snitching.
And see, Brother Clayton, what I'm saying to you is that
right.
that's the way it should
right.
be done. But in every community, it's not like that.
Not in
but
every
that's
community.
The philosophy that needs to be so, taught back or reminded
so, but Ray, let me just,
of where it came from.
So I do have to
and
get the
right.
front. I think what you're saying here, see, this is really interesting because what you're describing is what most people don't hear, which is changes happening from the community level that are going on every day,
mm-hmm.
that people are wrestling with to change,
mm-hmm.
that never gets into the public discourse
you don't want it to
about how we're changing it. Nor does the idea that we have to disinvest in a criminal justice system and reinvest in community. Nor does the idea that before you give a hotel a right to build here and give them all this tax write-off, that they have to say X number of people that you hire have to come from our communities here.
That's right.
Who says that a black man or woman can't become a sushi chef?
How about that?
Right?
That's right.
Absolutely.
So,
how about
I mean,
that,
I'm serious about that. I mean, because
that's true.
You know, make a lot of money in the middle of a downtown hotel. Why shouldn't that be everybody in our community? So I think that's what I'm saying. It has to come from both these sides. A ton of callers we've inspired.
God.
Let's go to the phones of 410-319-8888. Let's go to Mary on line 4. Hi, Mary. You there?
Yes, I'm here.
Go ahead. Welcome.
Yes. I want to piggyback from the beginning. Okay, first of all, I want to talk about the churches. Number one, everybody in the world knows that one slave came here with that religion. So in my opinion, that was not our religion then. It's not ours. It's the same religion of this land. It's the same religion
that's
the
right.
Ku Klux Klan had. So it's never going to help us. All it does is indoctrinate us with white supremacy. You talk about the budgets in the government. Please remember Bill Clinton, president, talking about the crime rate went down at the same time he was building prisons. So what are you building prisons for if the crime rate going down? Unless your goal is to create a climate that forces criminality. Yes, I agree on the shootings. I always say that I'm not community generated because no one knows who's in a car with tinted windows walking by shooting people. The police was never, police aim was never to serve and protect us, but to control us and keep us, just cotton up. I can't even stabilize us, not even stabilize, just to control us. That was there and to keep an eye on us. Number two. You always talk about Malcolm X. You talk about Muhammad Ali. No one says anything about Elijah Muhammad. Definitely, the Muslims in this America that started up with that man took a bite out of crime because they took a lot of men, a lot of drug addicts, and rehabbed them. But since the white man said he's bad because he said separate from you, nobody talks about him. So I want to talk about that again. You talked about the mosque and the churches. The mosque has always, since its inception, been more proactive than the Christian churches, okay?
All right, Mary, thank you so much. Let's go back. Let's get a couple calls and you'll come right back to the table. 410-319-8888. Matt, you're on the air. Line one.
Saeed, I'm just saying, like, it's a big problem with the kids in the neighborhoods, like, as far as resources and, you know, places to go at to play. And, you know, I'm part of Rose Street Community Center, and we got a program out here for the kids, and we try to make sure they stay out of trouble and stuff like that. Like, you know, I have kids myself, and we just try to make sure they got, you know, stuff to do. Like, we take them on trips to movies, out to eat. You know, we do a lot of stuff with them. Like, so we just try to keep them out the streets. Often, we don't want to see them get hurt. And resources, I feel as though that's a big problem. We don't have enough racks and stuff for the kids to go to playgrounds. Like, they got to travel 8 to 10 blocks to get to a playground, and that's not right. They traveling through drug-related neighborhoods and stuff like that. So, you know, I feel as though they should have playgrounds and stuff closer, resources closer to their, you know, neighborhoods.
Matt, thanks so much for you joining us. And let's get a caller in here. We'll come right back to our panel, 410-319-8888. Michael, you've been holding on a while. You're on the air.
Hello, how you doing?
Good, Michael.
Yes, I just wanted to speak a little bit about the things that Mr. C is doing in the community. I know he can sit there and he can tell you about them, and y'all can shake your head like, yeah. But this is coming from a guy that when he came home, I didn't have nothing. I was an ex-felon, nowhere to stay, and nothing to eat. And I can tell you that with meeting him and bumping to him, he's like changed my whole life around. I'm out here doing things that I never seen myself doing before. We out here holding the kids down, making sure they got positive role models. We out here feeding up the homeless. We out here passing out, going into different neighborhoods, just getting smiles on people's faces just because it's a little smile can change a person's whole day. Man, that man had me doing something I ain't never do before, and that's vote. So, like, the things that he's doing, like, it's positive, and it's not money motivated. So, like, I just want to say, like, thanks, and, like, everybody should just stand behind it and see the more things that we got to come.
Thank you so much for that call, Michael, as well. I think that is the power of programs like that, Rose Street, and I think that's part of what has to change of where we invest our money. Mm-hmm. And that, Tara, to me is a big piece of this. I mean, what I'm trying to say here is I think that these two ends have to come together if we're going to create the change that we need to create.
So, to your point that you made, and I can't remember if you made it during the show or during a break,
right. Which one was that?
Where you said what Rose Street has done in terms of policing, the community has learned how to police itself and doesn't rely on law enforcement.
Very little.
Yes, very little, right? Only when necessary, right? But not for everything. That's not talked about. That's not lifted up enough so that more people know about it. You know, a few weeks ago now, they created a war room, right? That included all of the law enforcement actors to sort of, you know, really begin to zero in on where is the violence taking the place? Who's responsible for it? How do we, you know, bring our surveillance all of our surveillance information together so we can begin the target. That's and great, because you do need to target who's doing the shooting. Where's the war room for organizations like Rose Street Community?
That's really
point. On our shoulders. Where's the war room where these community-based solutions that deserve more investment because they've produced the result? This isn't somebody who woke up this morning and said, ooh, I think I can start a program. No, these folks have been doing it for these many decades out of their own pocket and then also with investment from other places. Where's their war room? Because we need a war room like that. When you talk about if you're going to declare a state of emergency, it would be for organizations, community-based organizations to come together and say, this is how we do it. This is how we've done it. And if you want to replicate this in Sandtown, Winchester, if you want to go into Sandtown, Winchester and replicate what Rose Street Community has done or what On Our Shoulders has done, this is what it's going to take. And there are already organizations working in Sandtown, Winchester who are doing their best, but with some more. And I'm not saying it doesn't take like all the money. I'm not saying totally dismantle. I'm not a prison abolitionist. There are prison abolitionists out there. I'm not one of them. I think that we do need a couple of prisons.
For the baddest boys out there, you need to go away for
a while. Yeah. Just a little while. So I'm not saying like completely dismantle. And it's not the position of Open Society Foundations that we completely dismantle the criminal justice system. But our emphasis is in the wrong place, and we're reaping the fruit of it. And if we want to see something different, we're going to have to do something different. More of what the wrong we've been doing.
I could talk about Brother Clayton over there because, like I said, men have been on the line so long. And you know, when I come over that area, because we're the type of brothers that we can go either side. And I hear about the things, and I keep up on it. Even though me and him don't be in touch like that, I keep up with what's going on over there. And I always hear Rose Street, just like you talk of Poplar Grove. They're having a big reunion coming up, okay? But you hear the stuff that I do. But now I'm finding that the work is so needed throughout the city, right, that I'm just going wherever the Spirit needs me. Now, just to piggyback on the sister who called from the mosque, sister, don't you ever get us wrong, that the nation has always been there on our side, always. Brother Carlos Muhammad and all of them. And whenever I needed help, that's who was there quicker than any church or anybody else. And I'll put that out there. They were the brothers out there. Brother Hubert Brown, another one. So there are some great ministers out there doing
right.
work.
A lot of good ministers.
But we need to focus on that there's so many, right, that if three of them would just come together and focus on one issue. Because right now, it's so much going on. And just pick an issue and deal with that, okay? But we need to focus on what's at hand now, that our kids are going back to school, and they're going back to school afraid. And we need to take that fear of whether I'm going to live or die and put the fear of whether I'm going to fail or succeed in school. They shouldn't have to be worried about if they're going to live if they go to school. And this is what we need to focus back on. We got to get past all of that first. And that's not right. So now, are we going to still wait for some politician to set the pace for us to do this? Or was what we do was given to us at birth
but
to empower our own children?
Yes, but the question is, let me push back a little bit. That's true. Everything you said is true to the last penny. You know you're going to get no argument about as long as we've known each other. I would not argue with that. The other part, though, is if we do not push the political process and change it, wait a minute, then you will be doing the same thing.
Well, guess every what? Day guess for the what, next 50 Mr. Mark Steiner? You push the politics. No, let me push the part where I got to do to deal with
that's
that.
What I'm not saying push. What I'm saying is that unless there's a united effort,
puts
fear into the heart of this political structure to change it, then the beautiful work you're doing will never end from generation to generation.
If
that's
this murder rate hasn't put enough fear and embarrassment in their heart, that means...
No, it doesn't, because they can just lock people up and put them away forever. They don't
care.
Right,
because they don't care, number one. So what we have to do is start making our own care about who they are and where they are.
And I think to that point, Mark, I think you're beginning to see that. I think you're seeing that with groups like Baltimore United for Change.
Mm-hmm.
I think you're seeing
great
that
job,
with this great. I'm seeing a number of young people who are declaring their candidacy in the next 2016 elections, both Baltimore City Council. We got two 27-year-olds running for mayor.
Right.
You know, who knows? You know whether they're going to be elected, but they're creating their bully pulpit for themselves to push and get ideas out there and make the incumbents answer these questions. What are you going to do? What's
right.
the solution? And OSI, we don't back political candidates. We don't back campaigns, but we are partnering with those organizations that are organizing on the ground, doing their best to educate communities on the ground, mobilize, you know, private citizens who aren't connected to any institution on the ground to begin to put that kind of pressure and begin to put those questions and put that demand on government. Because you're correct. Power concedes nothing without a demand, never has, never will. You have to put a demand on it. I have long since came to understand that government rarely does good things on its own.
Right.
It does it
right.
in response to some sort of pressure.
Right. And 30 seconds, Mark. That's all I need. Grassroots, the definition of grassroots in our community, must be expanded to include the incarceration population.
Yes. Yes.
We must bring them to the table because they have ideas and thoughts that are lost. And without bringing them to the table, right, we cannot have a comprehensive solution from the bottom up.
Absolutely. The term of art that we've adopted within the nonprofit, or I should probably say the philanthropic communities, impact the population. You know, for too many years, even foundations have invested in solutions that did not include the impacted population, did not include the voice, did not include the leadership of the impacted population.
And don't forget, we realize we have to change that. The females who have incarcerated, paid an every due, that are coming home now, that has an impact. And the strange thing that people don't know is that most of these brothers and sisters who've been locked up for years, they come home with the intentions of giving back. They come home with intentions of wanting to help. Just to be shot down, just to be belittled and held to a higher standard. But you know what, man? I know hell, water, and hell. this is the way Mr. Cook going out, you know what I mean? And they say, Pop, you're going to need to sit down. But you know what? Our people didn't sit down on us, so we don't have the luxury right now.
You're not going to sit down until you draw your last breath, man.
Yes,
410-319-8888. I know that's true. Alex on line two, you're on the air.
How you doing?
Very well, Alex. Welcome.
I was just calling today because the topics that y'all are discussing are very important. I really realized recently in my involvement with the Rose Street Community Center how little people actually care about the youth. You know, it's always discussions on, you know, why they wilding out and why they doing what they doing, but we truly forgotten to invest into our kids.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody actually make our children sit down and study and read and all these other things. And as all y'all was, you know, discussing and touching, at the end of the day, it's going to take a collective bargain to get this done through our people.
Mm-hmm.
Education is the number one source to that.
That's right.
Education limits limitation. Everything you know, you can always create. And we gotten away from that.
Yes.
You know, so everything that we do down at the center is to encourage education, to encourage, you know, you being a better man, a better woman, to stand out against what's wrong. There's no reason with 215, 16 murders, whatever we may have, that whenever we see something happen, we encourage it rather than speaking out against it.
That's right.
You know, we'll see somebody do wrong and don't talk to them and then go talk to the party was wrong and tell them what we would do about the situation as far as taking it to the next level.
Well, I think then, okay, we're almost out of time, Alex, but go ahead, finish your last thought.
So we could just, you know, get away from that and really start respecting each other as people and as men and women. That would eliminate a lot of issues because we all see the number one problem here is nobody respects us as people, not even ourselves. So we can get back to respecting each other as men and women, we'd be much better in my eyes. And I just wanted to thank y'all for giving me that opportunity to say that.
Thank you,
Alex,
son. Thank you, son.
Thank you, Alex. Thank you very much. Thank you for that.
Mark, what I want to say is
thank you.
First of all, I love his term collective bargaining. You know, there needs to be a collective bargaining between community and the powers that be, such as they be. And there needs to be a power transfer, right? But one thing I've also learned, and one of the so, yes, I am very concerned and troubled by what I've been seeing over the last few weeks in terms of the increase in the homicide rate. But I'm also very encouraged by what I've seen in terms of people who have sort of stepped up and are activating at the community level. And again, there is no political leader right now who is taking point on this. The silence, or I should say the lack of a coherent message is something to be noted. So there is no political leader taking point on this right now. The leadership is coming from grassroots.
Yeah, right.
And they're learning how to connect to and work with each other. And one thing that I've learned in my almost 20 years of doing advocacy is that you don't need a majority. All you need is a critical mass. There's 620-something thousand people in Baltimore City. We don't need 620,000 of them to make the change. We don't need half of them to make the change. We don't even need 50,000 to make the change. All we need is a critical mass of people who put the demand where it needs to be put. And if you get that, you will see things change in Baltimore. Question is, we have to keep pushing towards that point.
And I think that's exactly what, I mean, and it has to, again, come from this bottom up. I mean, the people themselves can make that change.
Absolutely.
By making that push.
Yeah. That's right, Mark. Wow.
I mean, because people forget that we keep looking at poverty in Baltimore, and we think about poverty as using this kind of 1968 definition. When Johnson was president, that definition means nothing. My definition is, part of my definition is, there are 86,000 families in Baltimore City that are home insecure, not knowing what to pay first. That's poverty.
That's poverty.
That's half the people in Baltimore.
That's right.
That's what we don't want to pay attention to, Clayton. That's half the people in this city.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow. That's the power of change, but that's also the reality. That's we've got to push.
And that's the problem that's complex I won't say it's hard, but it's complex to deal with poverty because there's so many things that kept coming together to create that, right? Another reason why we've invested so much in the criminal justice system is because it's easier. It's easier to put another cop on the street. It's easier to put another cell in the prison bed. That's the easy solution. Yeah. This other part is complex, but this other part is the real solution.
Gentlemen, do we have 30 seconds apiece? You want to end up this? Okay. I'm literally 30 seconds we have, each one.
I just want to say thank you, Mark, for this opportunity because you're also giving men at Rose Street an opportunity. I had no idea that it was called call in, so I'm just touched.
I had no idea there were Rose Street people. That's great. I love it.
You know, thank you.
It means a lot. Mr. Cook.
Mark, it's always my pleasure, man. And like I said, I just want to, young people, don't forget your history because that's your key out. And for you right now, your only option is your higher power. So don't depend on anything else but your higher power because that's your only way out now. And remember that your ancestors paved this path. And like we keep saying that. And don't let nobody think that you didn't have a path. A rich bass.
Amen. So I'm going to thank you, Ray Cook, on our shoulders. Clayton Guyton, Rose Street Community Center, Tara Hoffman, Open Society Institute. Thank you three so much. And we'll continue this conversation weekly if we have to keep pushing and bringing different parts of the community together to talk to each other, talk to the folks who are working on policy change so we can actually begin to make some change in this town, not just let it sit around. I want to thank, first of all, we go out of first and thank Tara Hoffman for the work they're doing. I was really trying to wrestle with this and not ignore the grassroots, but try to make a change, which is deeply important. And my two brothers here, Ray and Clayton, who have been doing this work for a long time. And it's been my honor to stand with both gentlemen.
Thank you.
And what's been going on. So thank you all three for being here.
Thank you.
Thank you, man.
We continue to struggle. So we're taking a quick break and come back. News break. We'll come back. We'll look at they're changing the zoning in Baltimore the first time in over 40 years. It could affect your life and your community. Stay with us.